Chapter 16. At 3:30, in the ditch of the night, Alice said, "Oh, Mummy, too bad. Fading roses, this garden's over." Then her tone brightened. "Will there be snow? We'll make a fort, we'll make a leaf, we'll make a bird. We'll make a bird, we'll make a hand, we'll make a blue one, we'll..." She trailed off, looking up at the stars that turned on the night like a clock. The night was cold. They had bundled her up. Every breath she exhaled came out in white vapor. The bleeding had finally stopped. Jordan sat next to her, petting her left hand, the one that was already dead and waiting for the rest of her to catch up. "Play the slinky one I like," she said. "The one by Hall and Oates." Chapter 17. At 4:40, she said, "It's the loveliest dress ever." They were all gathered around her. Clay had said he thought she was going. "What color, Alice?" Clay asked, not expecting an answer. But she did answer.
"Green."
"Where will you wear it?"
"The ladies come to the table," she said.
Her hand still squeezed the sneaker, but more slowly now. The blood on the side of her face had dried to an enamel glaze.
"The ladies come to the table. The ladies come to the table. Mr. Riccardi stays at his post, and the ladies come to the table."
"That's right, dear," Tom said softly. "Mr. Riccardi stayed at his post, didn't he?"
"The ladies come to the table."
Her remaining eye turned to Clay, and for the second time she spoke in that other voice, one he had heard coming from his own mouth. Only 4 words this time.
"Your son's with us."
"You lie," Clay whispered. His fists were clenched, and he had to restrain himself from striking the dying girl. "You bastard, you lie."
"The ladies come to the table, and we all have tea," Alice said.
Chapter 18. The first line of light had begun to show in the east. Tom sat beside Clay and put a tentative hand on his arm.
"If they read minds," he said, "they could have gotten the fact that you have a son and you're worried to death about him as easily as you'd look something up on Google. That guy could be using Alice to fuck with you."
"I know that," Clay said. He knew something else. What she'd said in Harvard's voice was all too plausible.
"You know what I keep thinking about?"
Tom shook his head.
"When he was little, 3 or 4, back when Sharon and I still got along and we called him Johnny G, he'd come running every time the phone rang. He'd yell, 'Fofo Mimi?'
It knocked us out. And if it was his Nana or his Peepop, we'd say, 'Fofo Yu Yu,' and hand it to him. I can still remember how big the fucking thing looked in his little hands. And against the side of his face. Clay, stop. And now. Now." He couldn't go on, and didn't have to.
"Come here, you guys,"
Jordan called. His voice was agonized.
"Hurry up."
They went back to where Alice lay. She had come up off the ground in a locked convulsion, her spine a hard, quivering arc. Her remaining eye bulged in its socket, her lips pulled down at the corners. Then suddenly, everything relaxed. She spoke a name that had no meaning for them, Henry, and squeezed the sneaker one final time. Then the fingers relaxed, and it slipped free. There was a sigh and a final white cloud, very thin, from between her parted lips. Jordan looked from Clay to Tom, then back to Clay again.
"Is she..."
"Yes," Clay said. Jordan burst into tears. Clay allowed Alice another few seconds to look at the paling stars, then used the heel of his hand to close her eye. Chapter 19. There was a farmhouse not far from the orchard. They found shovels in one of the sheds and buried her under an apple tree with the little sneaker in her hand. It was, they agreed, what she would have wanted. At Jordan's request, Tom once more recited Psalm 40, although this time he had difficulty finishing. They each told one thing they remembered about Alice. During this part of the impromptu service, a flock of phone people, a small one, passed north of them. They were noticed, but not bothered. This did not surprise Clay in the slightest. They were insane, not to be touched, as he was sure Gunnar and Harold would learn to their sorrow.
They slept away most of the daylight hours in the farmhouse, then moved on to Kent Pond. Clay no longer really expected to find his son there, but he hadn't given up hope of finding word of Johnny, or perhaps Sharon. Just to know she was alive might lift a little of the sorrow he now felt, a feeling so heavy that it seemed to weigh him down like a cloak lined with lead.